get some dorm essentials. Amelia gets out of the shower and sees a text from Grady. I miss seeing you this morning. Boo for days off. Yay for days off, she writes back. I'm in real clothes.
I want to see, he writes, and then quickly adds, not in a creepy way.
Amelia takes a selfie in her baby blue off-the-shoulder peasant dress, blooming with hundreds of tiny embroidered red roses.
Man, you so cute. Aren't you going to ask what I'm wearing?
Amelia grins and types. Is it a blazer? Grady sends back a photo of himself in a pink Mead Creamery polo. Amelia doubles over, laughing. Take that off, imposter.
I'll do whatever it takes to take you out on a date, Amelia. For real.
And then her phone starts buzzing nonstop.
Will you please go on a date with me? Will you please go on a date with me? Will you please go on a date with me?
Grinning, she puts her phone on silent. Would this be how they'd do it if they tried long distance? There might be something nice about it. She'd get her space and have a boyfriend, too. The distance almost takes the pressure off, in a way. But what to tell Kate? The truth, obviously. She must tell her the truth. Sooner rather than later. She goes downstairs to eat a quick bowl of cereal. Kate's supposed to pick her up in 15 minutes. She finds her parents waiting for her in the kitchen. Can I borrow a credit card? I'm going dorm shopping with Kate.
Amelia, we need to talk, her dad says soberly.
Okay. She slides into her seat. Her parents share uncomfortable looks with each other, like neither one wants to go first. You guys are scaring me. Her mom places her palms down on the table.
We stopped by the stand yesterday for an ice cream.
You did?
We were hoping we'd surprise you, but...
What? She thinks they're going to say something about her being up at the farmhouse with Grady, or even worse, about the ice cream not tasting right. She takes a taste of every batch to make sure it turned out okay, but maybe she missed one. Sometimes it is hard to concentrate with Grady around.
The service was... bad, her dad says with a heavy sigh. Bad, Amelia. It was as if the girls didn't care anymore. I couldn't believe it. The lines were so long, but they didn't move like normal. And the girls seemed distracted, talking to each other and joking around. I know you girls have a good time there, but it was like we were an afterthought. We waited at the window for a good 5 minutes while the girls inside finished up a conversation with each other.
Oh, Mom says.
And I mentioned something at the bank, and, well, our experience isn't an isolated one.
And Dad adds,
We thought we should tell you since you are head girl.
I'm actually... Amelia pauses. Kate's taken control of things down at the stand.
Oh. Okay. Well, then maybe check in with her. She probably has no idea. It could be girls slacking off when she's not around.
Or, Amelia thinks, it could be the fresh start Kate talked about. Either way, it's not exactly a conversation she's excited to have. But better Amelia bring it up than Grady. If he did, Kate might just quit. And Amelia can see a scenario where the rest of the girls follow her out the door. Chapter 36. Amelia used to think the mall just outside Sand Lake was enormous. It definitely seemed huge when she was a kid and she used to get her annual picture taken on Santa's lap. But over the years, it's as if the place has shrunk. There are just enough stores to do a halfway decent back-to-school shopping trip, A Gap, a Macy's, a Victoria's Secret, a Sephora. But most girls in their senior class ordered their prom dresses online. In Molly Mead's day, this wasn't here. Amelia's not sure what was, probably just a field. The shops were all on Main Street. Molly bought a dress for her high school graduation at a place called Blauner's. It's now a dollar store. Miller's Pharmacy, now a Rite Aid, is where she'd buy cosmetics. One of the only places Molly wrote about that is still around is Corbett Jewelers, which is across the street from the post office, but Amelia almost never sees anyone going in and out of there. She and Kate take the escalator down into the basement of Macy's with two coupons Kate clipped for them out of last Sunday's newspaper. There's already a sale going on for practically everything in the home department, but these coupons, Kate informs her, will give them an extra 20% off on new comforters for their dorm rooms. Amelia feels oddly adult, surrounded by KitchenAid mixers, stacks of silver baking sheets, rows of decorative vases. "This is cute, isn't it?" Kate says, pulling out a clear plastic bag with a pale yellow floral comforter stuffed inside. She turns it over, then puts it back. "Ideally, I want a whole look. Sheets, comforter, bed skirt, pillow sham. What about you?" "I'm just going to get a comforter." Amelia knows she sounds glum, but she's dreading the thought of having to confront Kate about her parents' experience at the stand. "Don't. Get a matching set like me. It'll make your side of the dorm room look so much more pulled together." Kate laughs. "Though, wait, you'll probably want to run your picks by Cece." "Who's Cece?" "Cecilia, your roommate at Gibbons. Did you ever hear back from her?" Amelia gasps. "Oh my God, Kate, I never wrote her back. I meant to when you told me all those weeks ago." It's crazy how fast time is flying. It's practically August. "Amelia," Kate scolds. She grabs Amelia by the hand and drags her over to the mattress section so they can sit. "You are so worried about the ice cream stand, you aren't paying attention to what really matters. What if she asks for a transfer and you get stuck with some weirdo who never showers?" Amelia pulls out her phone and searches for Cecilia's email. "I just don't know what to say. She wrote this whole long thing about herself." Kate holds out her hand and Amelia passes her phone over. After reading the message, Kate says, "I'll do it for you." "Okay," Kate narrates as she types. "Hey, Cecilia, thanks so much for getting us the fridge. I will totally handle the microwave, no problem. Sorry for not writing sooner. My summer job is madness. I'll tell you all about it in a few weeks. Anyway, a little about me. I'm undeclared right now. No boyfriend. What can I say? I like keeping my options open." At this, Amelia tries to take her phone back. "Don't write that." "Why?" Kate says, swatting her hand away. "Because of Grady." Amelia's whole body goes cold. "No. Why would you say that?" "Chill, I'm kidding." As Kate continues typing, Amelia realizes that, should Grady randomly happen to text her, the fact that she's been hiding him from her best friend will blow up in her face. Kate narrates the rest of her email. "Also, not sure what the style is yet of our dorm room, but if it's bunk beds, can I claim the bottom? I have this thing with heights." "I don't have a thing with heights. At least, I don't think I do." Kate shrugs. "She seemed a little alpha in her last email. I want to push back on that a bit. I don't want her thinking she can railroad you. Plus, trust me, no one wants the top bunk." "Fine," Amelia says, anxious, and then takes her phone back. Kate settles on a bed in a bag, white with a blue ecot pattern, embellished with little blue tassels sewn around the edges. She buys a second set of sheets and a throw pillow. Amelia ends up with a solid pink comforter made special by little ribbons of chenille sewn across it. She can't find the matching sheets, but the saleswoman says they're available online. They're in the food court when Amelia finally summons the courage to ask Kate about the stand. The stand matters too much to her to let things slide anymore.
Did you happen to see my parents yesterday? They stopped by the stand.
Oh, yeah? I must have missed them.
Yeah, they said the lines were super long,
Amelia says, fingering the straw in her fountain Coke.
Like, longer than usual. Sounds like it was a little chaotic.
She's hedging, trying not to sound accusatory, giving Kate some room.
It is chaotic. Grady's making a total mess of the place playing handyman. All his hammering and sawing. I had to throw out a huge vat of waffle cone batter because there was sawdust in it. I don't know why he doesn't just hire someone.
I think he's enjoying the work.
Well, he's making my life incredibly difficult.
Something rises in her, the desire to hold Kate accountable.
I totally get how that would be annoying, Amelia couches. But I'm worried it isn't just a Grady problem.
At this, Kate groans, and it almost derails Amelia from continuing.
I know you want the girls to have fun while they work, but it's a job, too.
Kate dabs at her mouth with a napkin.
I don't want to talk about the stand with you.
But, Kate, I've caught you secretly looking over the stuff I do like 100 times, and whenever you come down to the stand, I feel like you always find something negative to focus on, instead of how much better things are, how much happier everyone is.
Amelia sits back. She can't defend herself against Kate's charge, because it's true. And Kate doesn't even give her the chance.
Kate begins gathering her unfinished meal and places it on her tray.
If you didn't want me to be head girl, why did you tell Grady I should be promoted? Why did you give me your pin?
Amelia bites her lip. She never actually said that to Grady. That was his idea, a way to smooth the ruffled feathers of their relationship. And it worked, at least temporarily. But the promotion clearly didn't solve their problems. Things are still weird between them.
Forget it, Kate says. I wanted to have a fun day with you.
I did too, Amelia calls out as Kate walks toward the trash can. Instead of catching up to her, Amelia lets Kate walk ahead of her at a slight distance. She was already anxious about the future. Now she's dreading it. Chapter 37. At around 3 o'clock the next day, there's a knock at the basement side door.
That's got to be my delivery from Marburger Dairy, Amelia says. She's in the middle of a batch, so Grady gets up and opens the door.
It takes the man 3 trips with a dolly to bring in all the milk and eggs and cream. Just in time, because she's about through with last week's delivery. And just like that, Amelia has more work to do. She's grateful for the distraction. Every time Amelia thinks back to yesterday's conversation with Kate at the mall, she gets angry. Amelia's made plenty of her own mistakes, but she's also shouldered the blame, probably more than her fair share, come to think of it, for the things that have gone wrong. And no one could say that Amelia hasn't worked her butt off for this place. So why did she let Kate blow off her concerns, her valid concerns? Is it just because of Grady guilt? Or something deeper.
Here's your invoice, the man tells Grady. The credit card you gave us was declined, but I'm still delivering your order because your great aunt was such a loyal customer. And just so you know, in more than 50 years, Molly was never once late with a payment.
Grady and Amelia share a look.
That's weird, Grady says nervously. And to Amelia, he deduces, it's probably all the stuff I've been buying at Home Depot. I can take a check, the delivery man announces. Okay. Great.
But his eyes bug out when he looks at the invoice.
This is a lot of money. Is this right?
It's the same as it's always been,
the dairyman says, somewhat defensively.
You're paying for quality. All our cows are...
Grady shakes his head.
I know you make incredible stuff. It's just a bit of sticker shock.
Grady, says Amelia.
Don't worry, I've got it.
To the dairyman, he says,
I'll be right back. My checkbook is upstairs.
Later that day, Amelia notices that Grady's put a for sale food truck sign on the roadside. Buying it never seemed like a good idea to her, but she hopes it will to someone else. Chapter 38. The county fair is always the last weekend in July. It's not in Sand Lake, but in Plastow, three towns west and way more rural. There are rides, music, livestock competitions, games. Business at the stand is usually pretty dead that weekend, and the head girl normally stacks the schedule so every girl gets one night off to go. Amelia assumes that's what Kate will do, too. But when Kate hangs up the schedule for that week, she's got a red line drawn through Saturday's second shift, as if the stand were completely closed. Kate comes up behind her. Don't say anything, she whispers, which is the most she has spoken to Amelia in a week. And it feels like a test of Amelia's loyalty. Grady comes in a few minutes later, looking for the drill. He glances at the schedule.
What's up with Saturday night?
His eyes go right to Amelia for an answer. Kate pipes up from the office. Oh, I figured Amelia would have said something. Every year, Molly Mead would give everyone the night off for the fair. It was like a special thing she would do for all the girls. Like, for bonding. Amelia tenses, thinking of Grady's declined credit card. Shutting down the stand, even for one night, means lost revenue. He said the stand is profitable, but can they afford it?
Sounds fun. And you know what? I'll pay for everything. Rides, food, the works.
Amelia spins. You don't have to do that, she urges. Kate comes bounding out of the office. That's really nice of you, Grady. I bet Molly would be proud. At this, Amelia's stomach turns over.
Please, Grady says benevolently. It's the least I can do. I used to be the social director of my fraternity. I'd plan outings and stuff to basketball games, a boxing match. I know how to do it up. Tell the girls to dress up. We'll meet here. Everyone can go over together.
Amelia pulls him aside. Seriously, you don't have to do this. She wants to say more, that Kate's making the whole thing up, closing for the night isn't a real tradition. But she can't bring herself to throw Kate under the bus. Though things are fraught between them, Kate is still her best friend.
It's worth it to take you on a date, Amelia. Here's my shot.
And so, on Saturday, Mead Creamery closes at 5 o'clock. Amelia shows up in a pink floral dress with buttons up the front. She braided her hair after her shower that morning, and now it is all waves. Despite everything, she's excited for tonight. Kate's in a silky green romper and a long gold locket. You look pretty, Amelia tells her.
Thank you, Kate says stiffly.
You too. And then, to the other girls milling around the front of the stand, Kate wonders, is he planning to drive us all over in the pink Cadillac? Grady comes down from the house. He's got on a dark denim shirt with the sleeves rolled up, a pair of light denim jeans, and his boat shoes. He's gotten a haircut, and Amelia can smell his cologne, cedar and clove and orange.
You look nice, he tells Amelia.
His focus is solely on her, as if no one else is there. Thanks. But she's quick to look around and add, all the girls look nice tonight, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Grady shades his eyes and smiles at the road.
Ah, look, our ride is here.
The girls cheer as a white stretch limo pulls into the stand driveway. Amelia has never ridden in a limousine before. She was actually kind of disappointed when their group rented a party bus for prom.
The man driving it comes out wearing a black suit and tie. Grady claps his hands.
All right, let's get our kettle corn on, he says and opens the limo door.
Oh, wait. Kate stops and laughs awkwardly. I didn't realize you were coming with us, Grady. This is normally a girls-only night. I'm sorry, I thought I made that clear.
Fuming, Amelia whispers to Kate, You do remember that this isn't an actual tradition, right? Just one you made up?
Grady glumly stuffs his hands in his pockets.
Ah, okay. Well, that makes sense.
Amelia quickly grabs him by the elbow. To the other girls, she announces, Since Grady's paying, I think he deserves to be made an honorary Mead Creamery girl tonight, don't you all?
And instead of waiting for an answer, Amelia is the first to climb aboard.
The girls hang back as Grady approaches the ticket booth. Amelia stays as close as she can to him, watching out of the corner of her eye as one, then another, of his credit cards get declined. Grady pulls out a third.
Sorry, but could you give this one a try?
The boy at the booth slides it into the machine.
Sorry, man.
Amelia wraps her arms around herself. Though Grady played it off to her initially, it's clear now that this is a repercussion from his dad.
Grady, we can pay for ourselves. She discreetly slides her hand into his and gives him a squeeze, whispering, No date is worth this much.
I have cash.
He opens his wallet and hands every last dollar over, buying admission for every girl and as many ride tickets as he can.
I can get more rides and food if anyone wants, he tells them as he passes them. I'll just need to hit up an ATM.
Amelia is just about to say thank you when Kate does something completely unexpected, snaking her arm through Amelia's and dragging her off like old times. After all these summers, Kate and Amelia have their county fair routine down pat. Together, they lead the charge, herding the girls toward their personal favorite rides, the bumper cars, the super slide, the tilt and swing, bypassing the rides that make them sick, the teacups, the zipper. They each get a corn dog and a fresh squeezed lemonade, split a bag of rainbow cotton candy, and devour it all while watching three college-age girls in matching denim dresses harmonize a country version of a Katy Perry song on stage at the grandstand. They pet the baby lambs in the livestock pen. They even get their faces painted. Just one cheek, the best friends forever, broken heart. As good as it feels to be with Kate, Amelia hates leaving Grady at the back of their group. She tries her best to make him feel included, pulling him in on different conversations, smiling when she catches his eye. But she's also careful not to be too chummy with him either. It kills her to do this. This night is for her. Some of the girls want to get their fortunes read, and Kate leads the way to the striped tent. Amelia's following, too, until Grady slips his hand in hers and pulls her to a stop.
Will you ride the Ferris wheel with me?
Grady, I...
Come on, get on quick before they notice we're gone.
They hurry quickly into the Ferris wheel line, climb into a car, and swirl their way up to the top. It's dark, and the stars twinkle above them.
What's going on with your credit cards?
Let's not talk about it. Not when I finally have you to myself.
It's your dad. He's punishing you.
Don't worry, he says, threading some hair behind her ear.
What are you going to do about Truman?
I'll figure it out. So long as I have the stand, I've got something.
Their ride is coming to an end. As their carriage lowers to the ground, Amelia sees Kate and the other girls emerging from the fortune teller tent, looking around for them. She squeezes Grady's hand tightly.
It's cool, he tells her. You can let go. I'm not offended. I knew what tonight would be like.
She eventually does let go, but not a second before she absolutely has to. That night, as she snuggles into bed, Amelia reads a diary entry. August 10th, 1945. I don't quite have the words for how I am feeling tonight, or what to put in my letter to Wayne. Almost a month ago, I wrote to Wayne, overjoyed about how well my ice cream went over at the benefit. He never wrote back. And then, 2 weeks ago, I wrote to him again about what might be the happiest day in my life thus far. My first day selling ice cream at our farm stand. Maybe that is the problem. I've never been more tired in my whole life as I was that night, but I was desperate to put the entire day down on paper so I wouldn't forget a single wonderful moment. I knew I only had it in me to write it once, with all the emotion I was feeling. But instead of writing it here, in my diary, I decided to put it down in a letter to Wayne. It was my longest one yet, pages and pages and pages. I wrote for more than an hour, even though I had a burning cramp in my hand from all the scooping. I didn't dare stop, afraid some little thing might slip away from me and be lost. The aprons all the girls wore, how long the line got and who was in it, just wanting to get down every single moment for Wayne so he could feel as if he were here with me, living it with me. I have been checking the postbox every day, waiting for his reply, or for both my letters to be returned. Undeliverable would almost be better. Today, his response finally came. A quick note, just to say hello and that he loves me. Nothing about my letters, even though I know he at least received the last one because he casually mentioned one small thing I had written about a friend of his, Paul Hockey, who'd asked after him when he reached the front of the line. No pride in me. No excitement for what I had accomplished. When I got to his signature, I burst into tears and ran straight to my room. Mother came right up after me and pushed open my bedroom door, convinced I'd received some sort of bad news about Wayne. She took the letter straight out of my hand and read it, and was so relieved. But it was bad news, to me. I told Mother how upset I was, but she thinks I'm batty for caring this much about ice cream, especially in light of the things Wayne and my brothers are facing every day. She made a million excuses for him, that he could have been going off to battle, that maybe a second page of his letter had somehow not made it into the envelope. She said, in all honesty, "How could he care, Maul? This is a hobby for this summer. Once Wayne comes home, you'll get married and start a family. And, God willing, if things keep going well for our side, your brothers and Wayne will be home before you know it, and you can go back to being just Molly. And everything will be the way it was always supposed to be." Mother said it to comfort me, but it did the opposite. The war changes people. I've seen it in Cy Sampson and Harry Gund, who came back. I sense it in Wayne. But I think the war is changing me, too. And I'm not sure I can go back. I'm not sure I want to. Chapter 39. "Can you please stop?" Kate asks her, poking her head out of the office door, the same way she's already asked twice before. But Amelia hears something in Kate's voice now that has shifted, from playful teasing to straight-up annoyed. And so she puts down the broom and gets on one of the windows. She's been back down at the stand for nearly a week now, and she's been very careful not to annoy Kate, especially after the county fair night, where it felt like they'd begun to patch things up. But even walking on eggshells, she seems to bug Kate every time she tries to do something that wasn't asked of her. Grady's down at the stand, too, doing the work that Kate has been complaining about. It's true, it's not the most conducive to business. The customers keep shouting, "What?" over the bang of his hammer, and occasionally Grady lets out a frustrated curse. Today, his focus is on the roof. He's trying to seal up the shingles with some kind of solution. The smell is pungent and sulfuric, and it's making the girls dizzy.
Every so often, a gooey drip of it will fall through the ceiling and land on the floor with a splat. Grady's shoes are sticking to the roof. Every footstep sounds like ripping two pieces of duct tape apart. I can't hear myself think, Kate groans and fans herself with a schedule she's been working on for the last hour. I'm going to pass out from the fumes. Amelia scrapes the last scoop from a drum of strawberry and then goes to the walk-in freezer to fetch a new one. She notices that something is wrong right away. She doesn't get goosebumps the way she normally does when she ducks inside. Has anyone heard this kick on lately? She asks, ducking out. The girls all shrug. The scooping cabinet between the service windows is set to 5 degrees, so the ice cream is soft enough to scoop. But the walk-in freezer is kept at -10 degrees, and the ice cream that comes out of there is rock hard. Amelia pops off the lid of a drum and drags her finger across the top. It sinks in deep, like into cake icing. She shouts out to Grady, Grady, we have a problem! And then she waits for him to answer. When he doesn't, she calls out again. Like an ASAP problem!
1 second!
She bites the inside of her cheek. She could move some of the ice cream up to the house, but there isn't enough room for all of it. She's completely replenished the stock. Finally, Grady comes down off the ladder and checks out the situation. He's sweaty and frustrated. In the office, he puts his sticky hands on the desk and the phone, and Kate is groaning. He calls a repairman and begs him to come, agreeing to pay whatever it takes to get him out straight away. The repairman opens up an access panel and begins tinkering. After nearly an hour, he says,
Haven't worked on one this old before. I replaced the fan and tried my best to clean the condenser coil. I got her running, but you're going to need to upgrade. If she makes it through the end of the summer, you'll be lucky.
How much does a new freezer run? Grady asks.
You're looking at around 8 to 10 grand.
Amelia sees Grady wobble. He heads outside, beet red and barely keeping it together. She wants to go to him, help him figure this out, but she can't. Later that afternoon, Amelia is out in the field, gathering branches of honeysuckle. A storm is coming, the sky is getting darker by the minute, and a mean wind whips her hair. Grady comes up behind her.
Hi.
His shoulders hang. Hi. She doesn't want to push him, but it's on her mind. What are you going to do about the freezer?
I don't have that kind of cash, Liquid. Not even close.
He spins her around.
But it's not your problem. I'll figure it out.
You could try to talk to my mom, see about getting a small business loan.
I don't know what bank would give me any money. I don't have a credit history. All my credit cards are through my dad.
But if we don't have a freezer, what are you going to do about next summer? Grady smiles thinly.
To be honest, I haven't thought much about next summer. I'm barely getting through this one.
It begins to rain. They stand in silence as the drops multiply.
Come on, Grady says, taking her hand. Let's head inside.
It's the perfect escape from what Amelia knows will be a difficult conversation. What does the future hold? For Mead Creamery, but also for them. They look at each other at the same time and book it to the house, branches scraping at their legs as the sky opens up and the rain spills out. Crashing through the back door, she's hot and cool all at once, and completely soaked. Her hair sticking to her cheeks, her shirt clinging to her body. Grady, too, is soaked through, his hair in clumps of wet curls, his chest heaving. He pulls her close to him and kisses her. Their wet bodies stick together. His hands are pulling at her, peeling her shirt up over her head. Then she peels away his, and they are kissing and walking, heading toward the living room couch, half-dressed, the rain blurring the view out of every window. The room is dark with the storm, until a crack of lightning flashes, brightening everything up. And then, There is Kate, wet as a stray cat, shivering in the hallway. The roof is leaking, she says, annoyed. I tried calling you like 17 times, Amelia.
I,
Kate shakes her head. Don't even try. Kate waits in the foyer, impatiently tapping her foot, while Amelia declines Grady's offer of a dry shirt, wriggling into her wet one. They all go down to the stand together. A few folks sprint up to the windows, but they don't have many customers. Grady climbs up on the roof and, in the midst of the storm, tries laying down a tarp. The wind lifts it up on him a few times, snapping it. The reason the roof isn't fixed, Amelia knows, is all because she wanted him to salvage those signed shingles. As Grady battles the tarp, Amelia scrambles to place containers on the floor to catch the drips. The other girls find rags to dry the floor, wipe down surfaces, pull the old milk bottles down from the rafters. Kate is the only one not moving, just standing still in the middle of the frenzy, snorting with laughter.
You seriously find this funny? Amelia manages to ask, even though she's having trouble breathing.
Will Kate out her and Grady to the rest of the girls? Would that be the worst thing?
Yeah, I do. You're trying to catch drips when this entire place is falling apart. The freezer, the walls. One more rainstorm this summer and we're flooded out.
Amelia knows this is likely true, but it doesn't make her laugh. It makes her cry.
Oh, lighten up, Amelia. It's just an ice cream stand.
She ducks outside so no one will see. Looking back at the stand and shielding her eyes from the rain, Amelia sees the tarp wrapped tight to the roof, raw lumber piled on top to hold it down. But there's no sign of Grady. Cold and wet, feeling like a dog nobody wants to let in the house, she wraps her arms around herself and walks back up to the farmhouse. She finds him pacing the length of the fireplace mantel.
I don't have the money for that freezer. I definitely don't have the money for a new roof.
The stand wasn't as profitable as she thought, and Molly hadn't been taking care of the place. Amelia can't help but wonder if it even would have been around next summer. What are you going to do?
I'm going to have to ask my dad for a loan.
Will he do that for you? Grady shrugs.
He might. He'd be in a position of power over me, which he'll enjoy. It's probably going to come with some conditions, though.
Like taking his ideas, Grady nods. Amelia, of course, is thinking about the ice cream. Grady seems to read her mind.
I'm just going to get the money, and then I'll figure out the rest later.
Amelia nods. She's got the same plan for dealing with Kate. Later. Chapter 40. Grady and Amelia sit side by side on the basement couch, heads close together, Grady's cell balanced on his knee. They're splitting Grady's earbuds so they can both listen in on the call. Jazzy hold music plays on the line.
Can you hear my heart beating? Amelia whispers to Grady. It pounds in her ears, in her throat, in her chest.
He squeezes her hand.
If this is too weird, you don't have to do it. But I like having you next to me for moral support. I don't want to screw this up.
Amelia can hear how nervous Grady is. She wishes he didn't have to make this call, go crawling back to his dad to ask for money. But what other option is there? This conversation is surely going to be about more than just a business loan. Hanging in the balance is Grady's ability to return to Truman this fall, and maybe any chance there might be to repair something deeply broken in his relationship to his dad. She squeezes his hand back. I'll be right here. The hold music ends abruptly. A secretary comes on the line and says hurriedly,
Are you still there, Grady?
Yeah, Nancy, I'm here.
Okay, your dad just got off his conference call. I'm going to put you through to him now.
Thanks.
Everything inside Amelia freezes as the line rings once, twice, three times. Then the clunk of a telephone receiver lifting off its cradle.
Grady.
At the sound of his father's voice, Grady immediately straightens. He lets go of Amelia's hand and wipes his palm on the leg of his pants.
Dad, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have something in 10 minutes,
Mr. Meade informs him. Amelia hears him shuffling papers around. She remembers the photo of Mr. Meade's office that accompanied the Truman article she dug up on Grady, his austere mahogany desk covered in piles and piles of work.
That leaves you 6 minutes. So, what can I do for you?
It doesn't sound like a question. Or at least that's how Amelia's ears interpret Mr. Meade's brevity. This is his opening jab in this negotiation, and he's immediately put Grady on the ropes. Grady takes a deep breath.
I want to apologize to you, Dad.
He glances at her, unsure of what to say. Probably because he isn't actually that sorry.
I let my emotions get the better of me the last time we spoke.
Amelia nods approvingly. Perfect.
I'm sure everything I said came out of nowhere, but...
Mr. Meade cuts his son off with a sigh.
I got an alert that you keyed into the beach house, Grady. So no, it didn't.
Oh.
You went through your mother's things, I assume?
Grady bites his lip.
Yes.
And that's all Grady says. Yes. Even though there's so much more to the story. Amelia wants Grady to explain, tell his dad about the letters and the missing recipes they found. But Grady keeps his lips pressed together.
While I appreciate your apology, this is exactly why I didn't want you to get involved with Meade Creamery to begin with. I knew you'd get emotional and lose sight of what's important.
Grady tenses up, leans forward.
Yeah, I got emotional. And Mom was...
He shakes his head, starts over.
She is important.
Amelia fights the urge to lay a gentle hand on Grady as a way to dial him back, because she knows he needed to say it.
Of course you miss her. And whether or not you believe it, I miss her too.
Hopefully, hearing this simple declaration will help Grady. And his father's words do seem to soften him. Amelia watches his shoulders come down from his ears. He leans back against the couch cushions, and Amelia leans with him. Mr. Meade continues.
But your primary concern needs to be the solvency of the business you are attempting to run. Which, don't forget, is an endeavor you took on to prove yourself because you nearly failed out of Truman.
I know.
Grady, emotional decisions are never good business decisions. Like, say, for example, telling off your father when he foots the bill for your clothes, your vacations, your tuition, your car, every single Starbucks coffee you drink, every trip through the drive-thru for a cheeseburger and fries. You can't let emotion cloud your judgment. It's a recipe for failure. The reason I have a dollar to my name is because I've learned to separate my head from my heart. That's not a weakness. That's an asset.
Grady's cheeks flush and his jaw sets.
I would like to get to a place where I didn't have to rely on you for money. But that's why you're calling, correct?
There is no anger in Mr. Meade's voice. If anything, he sounds satisfied. After all, he set this trap for his son by canceling all his credit cards.
So quit beating around the bush. What do you need? We've had a few operational setbacks at the stand. And you're out of cash.
Yes. After an excruciatingly long pause, Nancy comes on the line and informs Mr. Meade that she has his next call waiting.
Grady, I do think we need to continue this conversation, but I'd prefer to do it in person. Why don't you meet me at Wyndham Sands for 18 holes tomorrow afternoon? Nancy, are you there? Can you book us a tea time around noon?
His secretary pipes up. Of course, Mr. Mead.
Amelia can't believe she was listening in this whole time.
Okay, Grady says. See you then,
Mr. Mead says. And then the line goes dead. Grady pulls out his earbuds.
As much as I hate to admit it, my dad's not wrong. I shouldn't get emotional about this. I need his money, simple as that. He's got that over me. He always has. So I just have to play his game. I'm going to make this golf game as transactional as an ATM withdrawal.
It won't be like that forever, Grady. You're getting a good education now, and you'll graduate and get a job.
Where my dad will also pull the strings, he says.
He shakes his head, determined to push aside whatever melancholy is trying to take hold.
I don't mean to sound ungrateful. I know I've had every advantage possible in life. I'm better off than so many other people. I'm lucky.
Lucky is not exactly the word Amelia would use. But as she helps Grady pack, she tries to remain hopeful that this story will have a happy ending for both of them. He'll leave today, spend the night at the beach house, and meet his dad for golf in the morning. For a moment of levity, Amelia asks Grady to try on his golf outfit. He ducks into the bathroom and emerges looking handsome in a gray and white striped Nike polo made of super light material, navy slacks with a little swoosh on the back pocket, a bright blue belt, and a white baseball hat that says, Nike Golf.
Are you sponsored? She asks.
Ha, no, but I'm actually pretty good. My dad's forced me to take lessons since I was a kid. I regularly kick his ass, which drives him crazy. Once in Palm Beach, he got his ball stuck in a sand trap. I was cracking up until he drove off in our golf cart. I had to walk back to the clubhouse.
Well, tomorrow, let him win. She sits down on the arm of the couch. I wish I could do more to help you. Will you text me when you can? Let me know how it's going?
Sure. Wish me luck, he says, leaning down for a kiss.
I wish you all the luck in the world, Amelia says, and she means it, every single word. After Grady leaves, she stays up at the farmhouse, lying on the couch in the basement, listening to Molly's records, trying to figure out what to say to Kate about her and Grady. Obviously, her biggest transgression was kissing him in the first place. Grady was supposed to be off limits to all the girls, and though she tried to keep their relationship purely professional, something did eventually develop between them. She should have told Kate right away after that first kiss, but she was too scared. Why? If Amelia's being honest with herself, it's because her kiss with Grady wasn't the first time she'd picked him over the girls at the stand. After all, that kiss came immediately after she missed their 4th of July party. All Amelia can do is hope that Kate will forgive her when she's had a chance to explain. But how far will Amelia need to go back in trying to do that? She'll have to fill Kate in on Grady's dead mother and on the things she's read in Molly's diary and admit the heat that clearly existed between her and Grady the very first time they met in the stand. It's a whole summer's worth of catch-up. There's a lot she's been keeping from Kate. Amelia can't help but wonder if this will be how their friendship is come September when they're at different schools. And what about December? Will they continue to grow apart at lightning speed during the school year? By next summer, they could be strangers. Her stomach in a knot, Amelia walks down to the stand. The rain has stopped, thankfully, and the sky is a beautiful pinky red. She opens the door just as Kate is passing by. Kate gives Amelia the most fleeting of glances, and Amelia can barely get out a whispered, "Hey, can we talk?" before Kate stalks into the office and shuts the door on her. I deserve that, Amelia says as quietly as she can through the door.
Please let me explain. She waits a minute for Kate to answer. And then she turns around. Liz and Monsi are on the windows, and they quickly look away. One of the newbies looks away too, and tries unsuccessfully to form a waffle around the cone mold, but it won't hold its shape. Amelia steps over and discreetly whispers, "You only have a few seconds after taking them off the griddle to wrap them around the mold. If they start to cool down at all, they won't hold their shape." She realizes, as she's saying it, that the waffle cooled because the newbie was watching and listening to her appeal to Kate. The girl looks up at Amelia and whispers, "Thanks," gratefully and also nervously, as if she doesn't want to be seen fraternizing with Amelia. Liz and Monsi don't acknowledge Amelia. Sides have been taken in this battle. Amelia steps away, embarrassed. The stand looks like hell after the rainstorm. Amelia does her best to ignore the discomfort and awkwardness, focusing instead on cleaning, trying to get the stand back to the way it's supposed to be, appearance-wise anyway. She wipes down every surface, mops the floor, drains the milk jugs and buckets and empty ice cream drums of cloudy rainwater. Kate stays in the office the whole time. It's near closing when Amelia is finishing up in the bathroom. She's gone through an entire roll of paper towels and is well into her second. In the last hour, she's heard lots of whispering discussion inside the office, and she's hopeful that Kate will eventually call her inside to talk. But those hopes are dashed when she hears Kate's truck start up outside. Amelia checks her phone for the time. It's barely a minute after closing. Ducking her head outside, she sees that the exterior lights have already been turned off, and the girls are already in Kate's truck, Liz riding shotgun, Monsi and the newbie in the back. She watches, almost dumbfounded, as Kate calls out to her, "Lock up when you're done, okay?" before driving away. At Mead Creamery, Amelia's always felt like one of the girls, among her sisters. Now, she feels like an outsider, or worse, a traitor. Though it hurts, she knows that being left behind tonight is something she probably deserves. After all, Kate wasn't the only one she let down. And looking back, Amelia knows there were plenty of times when she could have been down at the stand with the girls, and instead chose to help Grady. What good was trying to save the stand if she neglected the girls to do it? One thing Molly said over and over again in those early diary entries was that it was never supposed to be about the ice cream. It was supposed to be about the girls. How could Amelia have forgotten? This is bigger than just her and Kate. If Amelia really wants to make things right, she's going to have to reckon with all the girls. Chapter 41. Amelia is the first one at the stand the next morning. She arrives with a Tupperware full of sweet corn muffins, which she stress-baked the night before, a tub of butter, and a container of orange juice. Her plan is to call all the girls into the stand for a staff meeting and lay herself bare, tell them everything that's been going on, share Molly's diary with them, try to explain her feelings for Grady and her reasons for hiding them, and most of all, she'll voice her regret over losing sight of the most important tenet of being a Mead Creamery girl, that the relationships created here are the most important thing. She already has the text written in her phone, but she needs the newbie's phone numbers, which she's hoping to find somewhere in the office. As soon as she unlocks the stand door, a strange foreign smell hits her, like something's been burning. She worries at first that the walk-in freezer has shorted out, and she rushes in to check on it, knocking over something made of glass. She stoops and sees an overturned Mead dairy bottle. Inside is a sludge of sooty water with several waterlogged cigarette butts. Amelia flicks on the lights. Though she cleaned the entire stand yesterday, it's been turned upside down, couch cushions damp and in a circle on the main floor,
pictures crooked, and the radio off the shelf, dangling upside down by its black cord. She opens the bathroom and recoils at the smell of vomit. Back outside, she lifts the heavy plastic lid on the dumpster. Inside is a pile of beer bottles and crushed beer cans. She finds more beer cans inside the walk-in freezer. These were left behind, and they have exploded. Icy beer has splattered all over the drums of ice cream Amelia made earlier in the week. The whole freezer smells yeasty. Amelia goes back into the office and pulls out her phone. She's shaking. She's so angry. After a bit of scrolling, she comes across several pictures from the party here. The girls having fun together, playing cards on the office desk, a dance party in the stand, running through the trees in the dark. That last picture makes Amelia remember once coming home late from her grandmother's house on a summer night when she was just a kid. It was past midnight. Her mother was asleep against the car window. They drove past the stand, long closed to customers, but the girls were still there, sitting around the picnic tables, talking, their voices a streak of sound that came and went as the car passed by. But last night's party was not just stand girls. There were other people here from the high school, too. Pictures of Dane Zapatowski and Christopher Wynn feeding each other ice cream straight from the scoop. A boomerang of Zoe Metcalf throwing fistfuls of sprinkles in the air on repeat. Three of Kate's academic decathlon teammates lying stacked like a sandwich across the office couch. John Stislow sticking his hand straight into the vat of chocolate dip. Amelia hears Kate's truck pull up outside. All three newbies are in her truck. They look totally worse for wear, green and unsteady. Kate comes in. Amelia knows she's surprised to see her because Kate avoids her eyes as she passes her. "Looks like you had some party here last night," Amelia says, trying to keep her emotions in check. "We had a great time," Kate stretches. "Sorry I didn't think to invite you. I figured you'd be busy with your boyfriend." The newbies all snap to attention. "Grady isn't my boyfriend," Amelia says, trying to protect a little bit of confidence, because this is true, Grady isn't. "But yes, Grady and I have kissed, a few times." Turning to the newbies, she says, "I'm sorry." Kate sneers. "I thought Grady was cute too, you know. I could have gone after him, but I didn't because we had a pact." She rolls her eyes. "Mead Creamery has been open for how many years now? Drama-free? One summer, one boy, and it all comes crashing down, thanks to you, Amelia." "That's not fair. You know the stand and you girls are the most important things to me." "You chose Grady over us. It's as simple as that. And he's had you wrapped around his little finger all summer." At this point, Kate turns to walk into the office. "It's honestly pathetic, but not surprising." "So is that why you had a party here? To get back at me? Because you know there's not supposed to be anyone but employees in the stand, and newbies aren't ever allowed to drink." Amelia expects Kate to look at least a little bit guilty, but she doesn't. If anything, she's indignant, folding her arms across her chest. "Isn't that convenient?" Kate says. "I'm the one who has to follow the rules, but you don't." Amelia tries to explain. "It just happened." That's about all she can get out before she feels the tears come. Amelia sees something soften in Kate when Kate sees her cry. "Look, I don't blame you. I blame Grady. He's been taking advantage of you from the second you met." "That's not true. Why are you defending him? He's using you, Amelia." Amelia shakes her head. "No, he's not." If there's one thing Amelia is certain of, it's that. "You're such a pushover." She's reminded of how many times Kate has called her a pushover this summer. And it suddenly hits her. It's true. But it's Kate and not Grady who's always doing the pushing. What about you? Amelia asks. Are you sorry?
For what?
You're the head girl, Kate. That job comes